October 28, 2007, in New Zealand, Srila Bhagavatam, Canon 5, Chapter 10, Text 12.
Vishesha Buddhe. Of the conception of the distinction between master and servant. Vivaram, the scope. Manak, a little. Cha, also. Pasyamaha, I see. Yat, which. Na, not. Vavaharatha, then the temporary usage or convention. Anyat, other. Kaha, who. Ishvaraha, the master. Tatra, in this. Kim, who. Ishitavyam, is to be controlled. Tatyapi, nevertheless. Rajan, O king, if you still think that you are master and I am servant. Karavama, I may do. Kim, what? Te, for you. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. My dear king, if you still think that you are the king and that I am your servant, you should order me, and I should follow your order. I can then say that this differentiation is temporary, and it expands only from usage or convention. I do not see any other cause. In that case, who is the master and who is the servant? Everyone is forced by the laws of material nature. Therefore, no one is master and no one is servant. Nonetheless, if you think that you are the master and that I am a servant, I shall accept this. Please order me. What can I do for you? Karavama Kimte. Karavama Kimte. What can I do? It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Aham Mameti. One thinks, I am this body. And in this bodily relationship, he is my master, he is my servant, she is my wife, and he is my son. All these conceptions are temporary, due to the inevitable change of body and the arrangement of material nature. We are gathered together like straws floating in the waves of an ocean, straws that are inevitably separated by the laws of the waves. In this material world, everyone is floating on the waves of the ocean of nescience, as described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Miche Maya Ravasha Yacha Deshe Katcha Habudubabari, Jiva Krishna Das, E Vishvas, Karlatar, apologize to any Bengalis who are here for butchering your language. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that all men and women are floating like straws on the waves of material nature. If they come to the understanding that they are the eternal servants of Krishna, they will put an end to this floating condition. So what's the solution? What's the solution?
Understand
we're servants of Krishna. Now Prabhupada's going to get back to the problem. So first he described the problem, then he briefly described the solution, now he's going to get back to the problem. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 3:37, Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajaguna Samudbhava. That means what? Ah! Very good. And this is an answer to what question of Arjuna's? Yes, why does someone act sinfully even against their will? Why is Arjuna asking that question? What's happening in the Bhagavad Gita that caused Arjuna to ask that question? What's Krishna talking about in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita?
Acting one's prescribed duties.
Yes, doing one's duty, engaging in sacrifice. And so after Krishna describes all the benefits of that, then Arjuna says, well, how come I can't always do it? Do we ever have that problem, that we know it's the right thing to do, and we still don't do it? You don't have to raise your hands. When I first read Bhagavad Gita when I was in university, when I got that question of Arjuna's was at the bottom of the right-hand page in the edition that I had. And I really wanted to know the answer. what causes a person to act sinfully, even if they don't want to. It's like, yes, that's what I want to know. And I turn the page, and Krishna says, this comment, Yashakota, Yashurajaguna, Samudra. And I went, oh, is that it? Due to the mode of passion, we desire many things, comma. And according to our desire, our activity, now this is also part of the key of the solution. According to our desire or anxiety, and according to the order of the Supreme Lord, can we do that again? According to our desire or anxiety, and according to the order of the Supreme Lord. So what are the two factors?
Desire.
Our desire and the order of the Supreme Lord. Material nature gives us a certain type of body. For some time we play as master or servant, as actors play on the stage under someone else's direction. While we are in the human form, we should put an end to this nonsensical stage performance. So just like nowadays, there are so many nonsensical dramatic performances. Isn't there? As we're sitting here, so many television shows are being broadcast. Actually, those waves are going through our bodies right now. And I think we can safely say that all of them are nonsensical. Is that pretty safe? Maybe there's one or two of them. Basically, they're all nonsensical. So there are so many nonsensical stage performances. It's completely nonsense. They have no meaning. So Prabhupada's saying here that we're also in one of those nonsensical stage performances. He said we should put an end to it. We should come to our original constitutional position known as Krishna consciousness. So here, what is the solution again? Second time Prabhupada said. What is our solution? Come to our constitutional position. How did he say it earlier?
Understand
you're a servant of Krishna. So what does Prabhupada mean here by constitutional position? Our constitutional position is?
Servant of Krishna.
Servant of Krishna. Which is interesting because this verse is speaking about master and servants. We should come to our original constitutional position known as Krishna consciousness. So how is Prabhupada defining Krishna consciousness in this purport?
Servant.
At the present moment, so now this is relating back, as Prabhupada is saying, our constitutional position, if we're a servant of Krishna, that means our master is? Krishna. No. Okay. At the present moment, the real master is? Who's our real master now? Maya, yeah, material nature. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya duratya. She's pretty duratya, isn't she? Bhagavad Gita 7:14. Under the spell of material nature, we are becoming servants and masters. But if we agree to be controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, here again, third time in the purport, he's giving the solution. If we agree to be controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his eternal servants, this temporary condition ceases to exist. So what Prabhupada is saying here is the solution?
Choose.
He's saying if we agree to serve Krishna and to serve Krishna's
servants.
Vishesha Bhurer Vivaram Manapcha Pasyamayana Vyavaharatamyat Ka Ishvara Tatrakim. Ishtitattvam, ka, who? Who is the Ishvara? And kim, who? Why is there Ishtitattvam, the controlled? Who is the controller? Who is the controlled? Tatapi Rajan, okay, king, if you think it's like that. Karavam kimte, what can I do for you? My dear king, if you still think that you are the king and I am your servant, you should order me. I should follow your order. I can then say that this differentiation is temporary and it expands only from usage or convention. I do not see any other cause. In that case, who is the master and who is the servant? Everyone is being forced by the laws of material nature, and therefore no one is master and no one is servant. So what's his logic there? Because we're all servants. Servants of? Material nature. Therefore, no one is really master and servant. We're all servants of material nature. Nevertheless, if you think that you are the master and I am the servant, I shall accept this. Please order me. What can I do for you? So who here has ever been in a drama? Who's ever been in a drama? Anybody? About a third of you. The rest of you never were in plays? In school, you were never in play? Nobody? Yeah. I figured everybody's been in play at least once. So in our preschool, our nursery school, what do you call it here? Nursery school? Preschool? For little kids.
Half a dozen names. Kindergarten, preschool.
Little, like age 2 to 5. What do you call it? Preschool? You all understand what I'm talking about. Little kids. So for 5 years, I ran a preschool. One of those years was little kids. It was like 14 months to 2 and a half. And one of the things we used to do is we used to do little impromptu dramas just for ourselves. So one time we did The Kidnapping of Rukmini. Many times, probably. It wasn't just one time. So I would always ask the kids, okay, who wants to play Krishna? Okay, whoever would raise their hand first. No. Who wants to be Shishupal? Who wants to be Rukmini? Who like that? So my daughter tells me that one of her most poignant memories of growing up was one day in preschool when we were doing the play of Krishna Kidnaps Rukmini. Who wants to be Krishna? And she's thinking, I want to be Rukmini, I want to be Rukmini. Said, who wants to be Rukmini? Somebody else got it. And she's there, unbeknownst to me, of course. I don't know what's going on in her head. And she's there. Oh, I want to be Rukmini. Who wants to be Shishupal? Who wants to be Balaram? Okay, who wants to be Rukmi? And she thought, oh, I guess I didn't lose out. She said Rukmini. Oh, I want to be. Okay, you're Rukmi. Rukmi. I don't want to be Rukmi. So this world is like that. According to our desire or anxiety and according to the order of the Supreme Lord. So our desire or anxiety and according to the order of the Supreme Lord, due to that, we have, ta-da! So who here looks in the mirror in the morning and says, that's exactly what I wanted? Anybody? I haven't met one person yet who said yes to that. And your the family you got, was it perfect? Anybody? Perfect? Too bad. Well, let's look at all the things we got, you know. We got the Rukmi part. We wanted the Rukmini part. We got the Rukmi part. So just think of the body that we have. Are we totally satisfied with what it looks like? How strong it is? How smart it is? How healthy it is? Are we totally satisfied with the mind that we have? Are we totally satisfied with the family that we have? Are we totally satisfied with how much wealth and education we have? Are we totally satisfied with our living conditions? Are we totally satisfied with everyone who's a member of our family? The country that we're born in? All these things. Anybody? Well, you know, it's a funny thing because that's what we ordered. You ever place an order for something and you get it and it wasn't quite what you wanted it to be? You know, you went through the catalog, or today you go through it on the internet. Ah, that's what I want. Yeah, exactly. Okay. And you order it and you're just like, what is this? Now, part of the reason that happens is it's two things. What would we say the two things were again? What? Desire, or what did else Prabhupada call it?
Anxiety.
Prabhupada also called it anxiety. And the other thing is what? The order of the Supreme Lord. So the order of the Supreme Lord has to do with two different factors. For the ordinary person, the order of the Supreme Lord has to do with how much what they have. Karma. Think of karma as coins, as money, as dollars. So I look in the catalog and I say, I really want that car, I really want that jacket, I really want those shoes. And then, you know, we've got to look here. Okay, I really want those shoes. I only got 20. Okay, I guess I can't get those shoes. You understand? So you decide you want, what are those shoes? Crocs. Everybody's wearing everywhere. I really want a pair of Crocs, but they're $50 and I only have $20. So then what do you have to buy? Yeah, exactly. You've got to buy the imitation ones, right? You feel the imitation ones? They're not so flexible. They look like the same, but they're not. So for the ordinary person, they're working on their anxiety and their karma, what they want and what they can afford. So, okay, that's often why when you get it, it's not really what you have in mind, because that's not what you can afford. And for the transcendentalists, we're working on Krishna's direct order. What Krishna feels is best for you. So we see this going on just like a child has some desire. Mommy, I want a cookie. And mommy says, yes, you can have your cookie, but first you eat your asparagus. So sometimes we're expressing some anxiety to Krishna. Krishna, I want this. Krishna, I want that. And he may say, well, but that will make you sick. That's not going to be what's good for you. Better you take this. And then if we're like children, then we may cry and pout. Why did you give me this? You're a bad God. Like Prabhupada said about the women in Germany, they were praying, you know, may my husband, my son, my father come back from war. When he didn't come back, they said, okay, God, you don't give me what I want. I don't believe in you anymore, as if he really cares about something. I'm not going to believe in you anymore. Like the little kid says to their mommy and daddy, I hate you. So generally, the way things work, as explained here in this very nice purport, is that the living entity is desiring and it has anxiety. Let's look at this for a minute. According to our desire or anxiety. Prabhupada's equating desire with anxiety. So desire isn't just something that you want in a, like a wish. It isn't one. Desire means what's really the anxiety in your heart, what your obsessions are. So just like we may think, I really desire pure devotional service, but it's what we're in anxiety about that's indicative of our actual. You know, somebody may say, yes, I really want to be rich, or I really want to be famous, or I really want to be a good person, or I really want this. But it's the anxiety that shows our real desire. All right, so by someone's anxiety, by what they obsess over, you can say, then a person generally will act according to their anxieties. That's another way you can tell what our real desires are. Just like in management, we learn that you can tell the real priorities of an organization by their spending patterns. So, for example, in every organization, what's the first thing you're supposed to have? Anybody who knows anything about management? First thing any organization is supposed to have?
Resources? A plan?
Okay, plan, but before plan. Resources fulfill the plan.
Vision.
Vision. Someday if I give my seminar on liberation through sound, we'll talk. So one has to have vision before you have a plan. The plan is how you fulfill your vision. So how do we know what someone's vision is? Somebody may say, this is my vision. But how do you know what their real vision is? By how they spend the money. So this is true on an organizational level, and it's also true on the individual and family level. And Prabhupada said, spend at least half your income on Krishna. At least half your income on Krishna. It doesn't mean you have to give half your income to somebody else to spend on Krishna. I don't think Kolavitra Sridhar was giving half of his income to some, you know, big Ganga worship project. He was using it to buy ghee lamps and things like that to worship. is that we can tell, because why money specifically is an indicator. That's like Jesus said, wherever you put your treasure, there is your heart. Prabhupada told this to his disciple Amarish. He said, wherever you put your money, there's your heart. So wherever an organization spends its money, also where we spend our what? What's another indicator? Time. Where we spend our time. Just like Prabhupada says, minimum 16 rounds. So when we chant our 16 rounds, are we giving Krishna our full attention? Of course, if you have a child under 5, obviously you have to give some attention to it. Or they'll be burned or killed. But where are we giving our time? That's also indicative of where our real anxiety is. And energy. It's not just time, it's energy. Like anxiety. Where are we putting the bulk of our energy? That's indicative of what our desires are. So desires are not just what we our wishes or what we think should be our desires. What we've been told should be our desires. And this is true materially or spiritually. You know, some kid is told by their parents, you should desire to get a good education. But if they don't really care, they'll superficially go to the university. And they'll do just enough to get by, but they'll give their money, their time, and their energy to the things that are really important to them. So one's desires become manifested through one's actions. Therefore, getting the reaction to one's actions is equivalent to getting what one really desires. It's not like, well, I desire one thing, but by my karma, I'm getting something else. Karmic reactions are the reactions to the manifestations of my actual anxieties, even though I may not be honest with myself about what those anxieties are. We can usually tell what someone else's desires are by looking at how they spend their money, how they spend their time, how they spend their energy, what behaviors do they do. But we're often not honest with ourselves. And therefore, when we get our order back, we're not very happy with it. So Krishna seems to be a very permissive kind of father. So I had rather permissive parents, which worked in my favor for joining the Hare Krishna movement. But Krishna seems to be a very permissive father. As you come to me, I reciprocate. Basically, the way that Krishna has set up both the spiritual and material worlds is whatever we want, we get. Whatever we want, we get. That's it. Prabhupada says that the whole creation is situated on desire. It's all desire. Now, Krishna has to be the one who fulfills that desire. We sometimes had students live with us to attend our school, and I remember one of them, she and my daughter, said they wanted to go swimming. So they expressed some desire, but they couldn't get to the swimming pool without my facilitating it. I had to drive home there. So I said, all right, you finish all your chores, and then I'll take you there. So the order of the Supreme Lord, Krishna has to fulfill our desires, we're very small. So he fulfills our desire either through Mahamaya, as it says here, or through Yogamaya. Now the problem is that when we desire something that's in Mahamaya, when we desire to become the master or the servant, the problem is, who's the master and who's the servant? It's illusory, Prabhupada says, it's nonsensical. If we desire something nonsensical that can't be fulfilled in reality, it has to be fulfilled, as Prabhupada says here, in a stage performance. Just like if your children, you know, they want to do something nonsensical, they do it with toys. Or today they may do it on a video game. You know, if you want to blow up the world, you do it on a computer game, where it's a little safer. You do it in fantasy. Because who's the Ishwara? Who's the Ishwara? Krishna. Ishwara Parama Krishna. Everybody else is a servant. Even Krishna's expansions are servants. Even Krishna himself. As soon as he has any other mood other than that of Krishna, he's in the mood of a servant of Krishna. Like Balaram. Mahavishnu. It's all Krishna, it's the same person. But as soon as he takes any mood other than that of Krishna, any other than his original mood, then he's a servant. What to speak of is Vimanamsa expansions, his little expansions, which are us. So if we get some desire, you know, oh, look at Krishna dancing in the center of the Rasa dance. Oh, I wonder if I could do that. I wonder if I could be in the center. So just like in a dance performance, what happens if everybody decided that they wanted to be in the center? What would happen to the dance performance? It would be a shambles. Yeah, would it be attractive? Would it be pretty anymore? No, everybody would be bumping into each other. Some people would fall off the stage. Or imagine a symphony. You go to hear a symphony. You go to hear a band playing. And each musician decides that they want to be the lead. You know, in jazz or even in raga, it's improvised, but it's improvised according to some rule. And usually there's some person leading the improvisation. And if you ever have a chance to go to the Hungary temple when Shiva Ramaswamy is there leading the kirtan, you'll see an example of improvisation with a leader. It's pretty nice. So he's got all these instruments. I was there for Janmashtami. There's a saxophone, there's a bass electric guitar, and there's an acoustic guitar, and a harmonium, and a Krishnadanda. And then he's got a conductor up at the front, and the devotees are dancing in a synchronized way, and he's sort of orchestrating the whole thing. Subtly, you know, they're tuned into his subtleties, so he just changes things a little bit, and they all know how to follow. But suppose the harmonium player decided, well, I'm going to just do my own thing. And the saxophone player, I'm going to do my own thing. What would happen? What would you get?
Noise.
Noise! C.S. Lewis in his book, Screwtape Letters, which is a fantastic book. Actually, both Jayadrata Swami and Vindasutra told me it's one of their favorite books. C.S. Lewis says there that in hell, there's only noise. He said in heaven, there's either silence or music, but in hell, there's noise. So I was at Woodstock this summer in Poland, and we were taking the Harinam party through the crowd, and there were some people playing noise. It actually wasn't even just a noise. It sounded like the gurus growling in hell. And it sounded like that. They're wearing all black and skulls and they're really loud. They just, you know, they're it's not even noise. Animals growling. So that's what happens when we each have our own illusory desires. It becomes noise. That's why there's adiyatmikani daivikani bhoti. We're out of harmony. Material nature, Daiviyesha Prabhupada says, it's Krishna's nature. That means it's in harmony with Krishna. Srishti, Siti, Pulaya, Sadhana, Shaktireka, Chayavi, Yasya, Bhuvanani, Nibhakti, Jindar. It's Chana, Rupa, Mati, Apiyasya, Chaitanya, Chaitanya. Chaya, she's like a shadow. The shadow moves with the object. So material nature is working in harmony with Krishna. Who's out of harmony? Why is material nature causing us suffering? She's in harmony with Krishna, who's full of pleasure. Krishna doesn't suffer. And Maya is Chaya. She's shadow. Krishna's shadow. She's moving in harmony with Krishna. So who's at harmony? playing our own tune and creating noise. This body is also part of Krishna, isn't it? What's this body made out of? It's all Krishna's energy. This body is meant to be in harmony with Krishna, so why are we suffering in this body? Why do we have adhyatma? Even the mind is one of Krishna's energies. It's also Krishna, Krishna's energy. Krishna's no different. It's also Krishna. So it's all in harmony with Krishna. So why are we suffering? Who's out of harmony? Who's out of harmony? We are. Every living entity is also part of Krishna. Why do we have suffering with other living entities? Who's out of harmony? We are. Who's creating the noise? By our desire, as manifest through our activities, through our behaviors. So we're making noise, just like a little child is making noise. Right? The little child is saying, I want to cook. But can they cook? 2-year-old child. So what does the mother give the child? Somewhat. The child wants to make a chapati. What do you give the child? You give them some dough? Do you give them dough that you're going to use? Is it nice dough? No. Or maybe you give them some clay? Right? Okay. Here's your chapati dough. Here's your rolling pin. Here's your board. Here's your dough. You can cook too! Just leave me alone. Because there's no noise in the spiritual world. It's all singing. So if you want to make noise, then you have to go there. And then you get some situation according to, what were the two things? Desire or anxiety and Krishna's. So he wants to play so many parts. So Krishna says, all right, you want to play that you're the Ishwara, you want to play that you're the Ishita. Here's your costume. Here's your makeup. And here's your role. Now, unfortunately, what's happened is Krishna's really a very good dramatic director, or for most of us, Maya's a really good dramatic director. And for those of you who've done a lot of work with drama, you really want to get into the character, isn't it? Or if you've directed anybody in a drama. If when you're playing the part, if you're thinking about the bills you have to pay, or the work you have to do, or, you know, the fight you just had with the brahmachari, or whatever, you can't get into your role, is it? So I used to play in the Ramayana. They typecast me as Sherpanika. But I had a really hard time playing the role. Because, you know, in the Hare Krishna movement, we're told, we ladies are told not to behave like that. And I didn't want to just get into it. I was afraid. And Lokamangala used to say, come on, stop being a nice little schoolgirl. I just couldn't do it. He'd say, just think of him as some big glubberman or something. So I'd stand behind the stage, and I'd go, okay, so much wealth do I have today, and I will get more according to my schemes. I'd recite all the demon verses to try to get myself in the proper frame of mind. I don't think I ever quite did it. You know, I'd have to go up to the devotee who's playing around and say, and I want to unite with you, Mr. Man. It was a little hairy to do on this thing. So my point is I really couldn't get into the part because I kept thinking, okay, I'm supposed to be a nice devotee lady. I'm not supposed to be acting like this. So I couldn't just let go. I mean, Lokamangala was really good. He was a really good ravana. But Maya is so expert that when we get this part, we forget who we are. Pretty much completely. You know, Prabhupada says, in the human form, she'll put an end to this nonsensical state. In the human form, there's a little sense that there's something wrong, isn't it? Every once in a while, if you're just human, you kind of stop and say, something's funny. Isn't it?
the money, I got the girl, I got the house. Is that it? Nothing else. Why aren't I happy? I did everything it says in the book that I had when I was a kid, and I'm still not. Or why do people die? Or why is there suffering? Why can't I make this work? I married the perfect person. How come it's not always perfect? I have beautiful, intelligent kids who have top grades. How come I'm not just ecstatic? I have my Mercedes Benz. So the human form is a little indication, that the stage play we're in is not quite the reality. But basically, we're just absorbed in it. We're thinking, I'm this, like I'm thinking, I'm an American. Because I'm an American, therefore, I act like this, I think like this. I want these kind of things. I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm a renunciate, I'm a hostile. And yet, I'm old, I'm sick, I'm healthy, I'm strong, I'm very smart, I'm not so smart. But they're just the character descriptions. You know, when you get a script, there's a description of each character. It's all this. And it's all nonsense. It's just nonsense. It's exactly like what's on TV. It's just nonsense. There's no meaning to it. You know, when I first was in the process of joining the Hare Krishna movement, I remember I went with a friend to a restaurant, and I was hearing the conversations of the people around us, and I thought, it's all stupid. And then I thought, so are all my conversations. It's all stupid. There's no meaning. You know, if you ever hang out with materialistic people for a while, maybe you visit some non-devotee family or something, you wonder, how do they talk about these things all the time? And they never talk about anything of substance. Even when they're dying, you know, when my mother was dying, even the priests and the ministers and the rabbis that were there in the nursing home, none of them talked about anything of substance. All they could talk about was how you're doing today, how you're feeling. So you see, it's all nonsense. So what is the solution? The solution is to change our desire. That's the solution. Actually, everything that we're doing is meant to change our desire. This whole process of sadhana bhakti, that's its only purpose. Because as soon as we desire only Krishna, as soon as our anxiety is, I want to serve Krishna, then we will. Do you think Krishna is making it hard for us? Does he want us? Does Krishna want us? Are we convinced? Maybe each of us, hopefully each of us, do we have somebody that we like who doesn't like us as much as we like them? Somebody with whom we'd like to have a better relationship, maybe it's one of our parents, maybe it's one of our kids, maybe it's somebody else who lives in the ashram with us. And if it's not now, maybe somebody in the past, where we were always disappointed that this person didn't like us and wanted to be with us as much as we wanted to be with them. That's how Krishna feels about us. He wants to be with us intensely. In fact, it's the only thing he doesn't have is our association. He really, really wants us. So he's not making it difficult for us. Prabhupada says, until nishtha, it's a hard struggle with determination. That's not created by Krishna. That's because our desire is not very strong. Our anxieties are for other things. So as soon as we really want him, he's there. If we want him and, then we will get him and. So if we were in Krishna consciousness in a previous life,
which, according to Rupa Goswami, most of us probably have some connection in a previous life, we wanted Krishna and, unless we've come here just to preach. Even our children, they wanted Krishna and. I want Krishna and I want to marry this person. I want Krishna and I want money. I want Krishna and I want good health. I want Krishna and I want yogic power. I want Krishna and I want. Okay. And the higher the Krishna part of that equation, then the more pious of a birth one gets. So we can ask ourselves in the things that we're doing, you know, you're all doing things in class, which, by the way, Prabhupada didn't accept, but anyway, nobody listens to me. Oh, no. I'm giving up on that. But just to inform you that Prabhupada never allowed people to do things in class. So just like all these things that you're doing, you know, you're packaging up prasada for distribution, you're making garlands for Krishna, we're dressing in deities, we're chanting by Krishna, we're reading in the books, you know, we're putting our tilak. Everything that we're doing throughout the day is connected with Krishna. Are we using those activities to increase our desire? Remember first I was talking about the connection between desire and activities? So one way that we start to change our desire is we start to change our behaviors. Okay, get up early, chant Hare Krishna, worship the deity, with the idea that if you start changing your behaviors, it will start to change your desires. So to what extent are we letting that happen? To what extent are we facilitating that? To what extent are we doing our behaviors in a mechanical way? As a ritual, as a routine, just so we can be, you know, a card-carrying member of the Hare Krishna movement and tell ourselves, yes, you know, I'm a very spiritual person. And to what extent are we actually working on transforming our desires? So we need to ask ourselves, and this is the challenge that Prabhupada's giving here, what we're reading in Hari Sargam's diaries. Right? It's really interesting that we read that section. Then why you are not serious? What kind of body are you going to get? Here is a body tree. If you are going to accept a body like this, just how miserable it will be. Why are you not afraid? Which body am I going to get? Why we are not serious? So this applies to us too. I mean, it's very nice to be a child growing up in the Hare Krishna movement, but you really want to do that because we haven't gotten our desires. And we don't know if Pranakam will still be around and be our teacher. Who knows, he will get us our teacher. You know, we may end up on the heavenly planets in this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. So where do we want to go? It's up to us. Pretty much completely. Because Krishna's going to reciprocate with others. So if we're unconscious about our real desires, if we're not honest with ourselves about our real desires, then either Maya Devi, who really knows what's going on with us, or Krishna, depending on where we're functioning, will arrange for us to get something that actually is in accord with our desires. So our business is to become aware. That's not such a pleasant process. As Krishnadas Kaviraj says, my dear Bhakti Ganan, or Satchananda Swami says, my dear devotees. It's not such a pleasant process, my dear Vaishnavas and Vaishnavas, to become aware of what our real desires are. If this body is the gross form of our desires, if this body is the gross form of our desires, then what kind of desires do we have? What kind of desires manifest as skin and hair and stool and kidneys and stomach? What kind of desires take that sort of gross form? I don't think very nice desires. Now, some of us who have come here, like some of these children, they've gotten this body. They couldn't have had a much higher body, but they have this body to be part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. But for most of us, if we have a very gross form, that means we have very gross desires. So facing that is not terribly pleasant. It's something like going to a doctor and finding out that you have a really, really horrible disease.
But unless we face that, unless we face what are our real desires, you can't work on changing them if we pretend that our desires are something other than what they are. So we need to face what are our real desires and then work on that level. Everything should be done on that level, not just superficial, not just mechanical. And then that's the definition of greed. The definition of greed, Prabhupada says, is when you want Krishna more than anything else, when you're willing to pay any price to get Krishna. That's greed. That's actual anxiety. That's actual desire. So we have just a couple of minutes. Yes. First of all, understanding that it's required, that if I want to get to where I want to get to, then that's part of what I'm going to have to do. Just like yesterday, I cleaned my room. So if I'm going to clean the room, I have to look for dirt. That's part of the process of getting a clean room. You have to look for where's the dirt. And you've got to look under things. Behind things. And that's okay. I think also part of it is understanding that it's not me, that the desires I have in this conditioned state are not really the desires of the soul. You know, it's embarrassing, but ultimately it's not. I don't have to be that embarrassed. Another thing I find that helps is that probably other people already know what they are. Just like, do you know the faults of everybody else in the community? If I asked any of you, you know, please pick a devotee here and list all their faults, would it be a really hard job? So, you know, why are we so embarrassed about looking at our faults? Everybody else already knows them. I mean, part of it is we think, you know, well, if I just don't admit it, then nobody will know. But everybody already knows. The only person who doesn't know is ourselves. Krishna certainly already knows, and he still likes us. So getting a little courage, you know. Krishna already knows what my faults are. Mayadevi already knows what my faults are. All the other, my mommy and daddy, and my brothers and sisters, and my husband and wife, and my children, and all the devotees, they already know what they are. You know, it's high time that I looked at it too. And you know, you're not going to wallow in it. I mean, I don't have time to get into this now. The idea of looking at them is so you can get rid of them, not looking at them so you can wallow in them. You want to know what your disease is so you can take the appropriate cure. And how can you take the appropriate cure unless you know what your disease is? So you look at it like that. I want to be healthy. So if I want to be healthy, the first thing I need is a proper diagnosis. Duh. Why am I afraid of getting the diagnosis? The doctor doesn't like me. So if the doctor says, you know, you have a tumor here and you have this here, and then I know I'm not going to become depressed about that. Oh, so tumor. And then, okay, what's the cure? So I should be opening, I should be going to Krishna and saying, you know, Krishna, give me the proper diagnosis and the proper cure. And I mean, we already know what it is, but you have to see it in yourself. We already know that our desires are less than your enemy. We can say that, oh yeah, but you have to see it. You see it only in as much as you design a cure for it. Don't wallow in it. Don't be afraid of it. Okay? Does that help? Yes.
Sometimes it's difficult to accept that karma is what we really desire, especially when we things don't come our way.
Well, the problem is we think that we're good people. I think I'm a really nice nice person. I don't deserve this. As again, as we're not honest. We're not honest about who we are. So you can do a simple little exercise. If we accept that this principle is valid, that whatever I'm getting back, I must be giving out. Whatever I'm getting back, I must be giving out. Whatever I'm getting back, I must be giving out. Whatever I'm getting back, I must be giving out. Just accept that I'm principle. So sometimes it comes in a different form. An example is, at some point in my travels in some country, at some place which shall remain unnamed, I was put in the home of some lovely people who obviously never cleaned their bathroom. And if any of you have ever been on an Indian train, who's ever been on an Indian train? Can you even walk past the bathrooms? What to speak of going into them? I saw how they clean them. When they stop for a while, they just take a bucket of water. You know, one of these guys, they just take a bucket. They don't even want to go in, even the untouchable peoples. They stand in the door of the bathroom and they just go with the bucket of water in, and that's clean. And it's just, you're almost gagging. So anyway, these people's house where I stay, the bathroom is exactly like that. You know, I was thinking, how am I getting clean in this place? You know, I'm trying to bathe and just like not breathe. So, you know, you might think, well, I never leave a bathroom that dirty. How can this be? How can I be getting back what I give out? I don't do that. I don't let my bathroom smell like an Indian train station. We'll have to ask Hargree after some time. Thank you. But then if I look at it at a little deeper level, so they're being inconsiderate, right? Irresponsible. Could we say that? Or even unclean? Okay. And so am I ever inconsiderate? Am I ever deliberately inconsiderate? So just a few weeks ago, I was supposed to give a ladies' class between 10:30 and 11:30. And I was thinking, I was in the middle of doing something, and the people came to get me at 10:20, but I was in the middle of doing something that I didn't want to finish. And I said, well, they'll probably all be late anyway. So I was knowingly late. Okay, you with me? Now it turned out that everybody was on time. Not only was everybody on time, but they had a ride planned at 11:30 for half of the women to leave because they figured it was 10:30 to 11:30. I got there at 11, so then they had to leave after a half an hour, and they weren't happy with me. So I was inconsiderate, knowingly. Am I ever irresponsible? Do I ever say I'm going to do something and not do it? Or not do it as fast as I say I'm going to do it? My answer to that has to be yes. Am I ever unclean? Do I ever have cleanliness standards and aren't quite what they want to be? Well, I have to say yes. So am I guilty? Yes. Now, I mean, my guilt may not show up in that form. So the distress that I felt on using those bathrooms, which you can believe I used as little as possible while I was there, have I ever caused anybody the equivalent distress? Probably. Maybe those ladies who had to leave at 11:30 felt as much distressed as I felt trying to hold my breath in that bathroom. You understand? But I don't perceive that. I'm very much in myself. So I don't, my consciousness is not in Krishna. My consciousness is very much in myself and in this bodily identification. So I don't perceive how other people are affected psychologically and emotionally by my behaviors and my words. I'm often not even aware of it. Not that I couldn't be aware of it, but I choose not to be. I choose to have my consciousness very localized. So I don't know how I'm causing pain to others. And sometimes I know and I just don't care. Isn't it? Sometimes we realize that what I'm saying or what I'm doing is causing pain to some other person. And we excuse it on the basis of, well, it's necessary to get the job done. I have some service to do for which it's necessary to fry out these Vaishnavas. Otherwise, otherwise how will I get this service done? Or, you know, I have to do something for myself. I have to eat, I have to sleep, I have so many things, and if I can, you know, cause distress to others in the course of doing that, well, I have to survive, Hare Krishna. Oh, well. And sometimes we cause pain to others intentionally, especially the people that we claim to love the most, who are likely to hurt the most. Our mother, father, sons, daughters, husband, wife, brothers, sisters, are the people we're most likely to give trouble to, or the people that we live with intimately in the ashram, the people that we claim to have the most affection for. We're mad at them. They did something to bother us. They woke us up from our nap, or they didn't save prasadam for us for after the fast. And we're angry at them, and we say something or do something intentionally that we to cause them pain. Do we do this? Am I the only one who does these things? Do we do this? You ever done this? You're mad at somebody? And we're intentionally trying to hurt them because we think that way if we hurt them, then they'll understand how much we're suffering and then they'll be nice to us and they won't hurt us again. That's another class. So we hurt people in three ways. Unconsciously, we're so wrapped up in our own self that we don't even know we're hurting other people. Or we know what we think is sort of an unavoidable side effect of our activities and we regret it, but we just sort of say, well, oh well. I realize I'm inconveniencing people, I realize I'm hurting people, I realize people are distressed, but I gotta do what I gotta do now. I wish I didn't have to hurt them at all. I don't hear people intentionally to try to get something for us. So whatever hurt we're causing to others, that same hurt is coming back to us. It may come back in a different, the package may be different. The external form, but the psychological experience would be the same. Whatever psychological experience we gave to others, we will have that same. And what I found is if you accept this in theory, and when things come to you, if you say, my dear Lord, please show me how I am causing the same distress to another living entity, and you really want to know, then he'll show you, and he'll often show you very quickly. And I'll end with one example, that I had a couple of authorities who for years would make decisions about my life without asking me. And it was just maddening. Okay, Anila, this is now your service, and you're doing this and this, and we're making this change and this change. And I'd say, you know, can you invite me to the meeting? Why don't you invite me? You bring up my name, you bring up my life, you bring up my service, and you don't ask me. Why do you do this? Oh, yes, Mataji, you won't do this anymore. Next time, Lord, ask you first. Thank you very much. And it would happen again. And I would always think, I don't do that. I never do that. I don't make decisions that affect people's lives without consulting with them. I'm a considerate person. And so one day I decided to apply this to myself, and I said, all right, Lord, I accept it in theory. I don't see where it's happening here, but it keeps happening to me. I must be doing it. All right, please show me how I am doing this to other people. Okay. So next morning, I was sitting to chant my japa, and before I started chanting, I said this little prayer. I said, Krishna, you know, I know that what's standing between me and really understanding that the holy name is you is my aparad. If there's anybody that I've offended, please let me clear that if there's anyone. And then I started to chant. So at the end of the morning program, I had to go somewhere and just stop by the kitchen to pick up a plate of prasadam. And one of the ladies who was cooking said, oh, I don't know why, I really want to tell you something. She said, all morning I've just been like, I really want to tell you, and I'm just kind of afraid to tell you, but I really want to tell you. I just have to tell you this thing. Okay, please. She said, you know, about a year ago, you said this thing to my good friend, and you said this to her, and she said, you offended her so much that she doesn't want to come to the temple anymore, and that's why she's not here very much. I said, oh, thank you. She's like, well, you're not upset. I said, no, thank you so much. You know, I'm so excited. So I went home, and I immediately got on the phone, and I called her, and I said, you know, that the thing that happened last year, and I was talking to you, and I said this, and I guess I knew. And I just started listening. Guess what she said to me? What do you think she said to me? She said, you, what? What do you think she said? Yeah, she said, you made a decision about my life without consulting me first. I had never interpreted it that way. I hadn't understood that at all. Shimon and I helped deliver lots of babies, well over 40, and I was invited to be at a birth. And she was also supposed to be there, and she's kind of a heavy-duty person. I didn't want her to be there. I thought it would adversely affect the mother. And so I basically arranged that she wouldn't come. And what I perceived it that I was helping the mother, but she perceived it that I was making decisions about her life without consulting with her. So I've had a number of examples, and I was shocked. I never perceived it. You know, I'm listening on the phone, and I was like, oh, my God. This stuff is real. This is not just, in Prabhupada's purport that, oh, this is nice philosophy. That's why we're suffering. It's real. It's very, very real. It's very real. And the fun thing about this, the nice thing about this means, guess who has the power to change things? Okay? We're not victims. It's all in our hands. We can change it. If we want to get back something different, put out something different. Okay? Is that all right? I went a little over. I hope I don't get it. Thank you very much. All the way to Shishua.